Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I just tried a new intro and I really didn't like that at all, so I won't be doing that one again. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name of the podcast, the fact that it says it on your screen right now, and the fact that this is probably the 13th episode, I think, right now. Today, I am joined by, I want to say a special guest, but all my guests are special, so you're naturally a special guest. So James Duffield, the co-founder of teams.gg. Hello. Is the domain and the company name. Hello.
Yes.
Thank you for joining me today, man.
Thank you for having me. I liked your intro. Hello, hello, hello. I like that. I don't know. That might be it from now on.
I don't know whether I need to be a bit more like, yo, what's up, guys? Hi. Like, I could go full YouTuber. But yeah,
you should always be yourself. Be yourself. And I think be yourself is hello, hello, hello.
No, if I'm being myself and it's like, what's up, you bastards? Like, you know what I mean?
You'll tone that down at some point when you become massive, I guess.
Whenever that is. I don't think that's going to happen, but well, fair play. So, right, something I've done in the last couple of episodes is get people to actually describe how they see themselves. So, I'll explain a bit more first. So, I'm now creating videos and podcasts and shit, but I don't like the term content creator, because I mean, I've already been creating content via written content anyway, so I prefer to just say like video maker or some shit. That doesn't sound good, but I know. But I mean, everyone has their own definitions and sees themselves a certain ways, you know, and especially when it comes to like creative things, it could be like creative strategist or creative director or something I've never heard of. So how would you describe yourself and what you do, your kind of line of work?
I describe myself as a content creator. No, I'm joking, right? Actually, I did for a long time, and actually, I personally quite like that term because I worked in an industry where we referred to content creators as influencers a lot of the time, and I'm not a huge fan of that word. And I remember the first time I heard that word, I was kind of sick in my mouth a little bit, but then I started getting used to it, and that made me sad. so I prefer content creators in that in that situation, but that's really difficult. It's really difficult to kind of define what I do right now because it's so mixed up in like business and investment, and then the kind of thing that I've been doing the last 5 years, which I kind of is the thing that I like doing the most, is building things. So I guess
you're a builder.
I'm a builder. But if you say that to people, they get really confused. They think I'm laying bricks.
So you're a digital builder. I think we're coming up with new
I'll tell you what,
new roles here.
That's fantastic. That should be on. If I ever redo my website one day, it'll be James Duffield Digital Builder.
That's banging, to be fair. But yeah, it is. But the thing is, like, with content creator, if you just write something in Notepad, then upload that to Medium and publish it, you can call yourself a content creator. I don't think there's any sort of prestige in that, or like, there's no accounting for the experience you have. And I guess that's the same with like video maker or whatever. But if you're like, I don't know, some titles you have to earn them. And it's interesting just to see where people align themselves within those, you know?
Yeah, I get that. And I think that works across the board. There's people out there who say they're a designer because they opened Photoshop for the first time.
Or Paint or whatever,
Or there's probably people out there saying they're builders, but they're not accredited. So it's really difficult. I think all industries have that issue. When I think of content creator, I think of someone who is regularly creating content. Whether if that is writing, then yeah, you're a content creator. Yeah. Whether if that's video, great. If you're on Instagram and you're a photographer, then you're a content creator. So but you have to, when you hear that from other people and they say I'm this, you have to take it with a pinch of salt, just like with any industry, I guess.
Of course, it's like when people write one match recap and call themselves journalists, it's the same kind of thing there as well. I told myself I was going to start being nicer. I told myself, 2020, I'm going to be nice about people, and if I have negative thoughts, they don't need to hear it. But but I can't help myself, man. It's like
what Thumper said in Bambi. Do you remember that?
I've never seen that film.
Thumper says,
My parents didn't love me enough.
If you ain't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Imagine how boring of a world that would be, though.
True.
And we're getting there'll be no progress made if no one actually came out and said the hard things that no one else wanted to say, you know.
Yeah. You could say hard things. I don't know. Thumper didn't really delve into it in Bambi. He just said it and then hopped off.
It was like a deep, like philosophical trip.
I think Walt Disney might have put it in there for like maybe he was trying to brainwash us kids, but like at the time I don't think Thumper really thought about it too much.
Fair play, Matt. Right, so before Teams.gg came about, we'll get into some serious stuff for a bit. You were at Twitch, right?
Yes, I was for five years.
So, as much as you would like to say, it's completely up to you. As I say with all people, like, you can be completely honest or you cannot. It's up to you, because I understand the reasons for not being honest in some cases. Right, that's just to establish that for the entire podcast. Though I would prefer you to be honest, but yeah.
I think I can be honest. When it depends what you ask me. Yeah, like, I haven't done anything too bad, so
I'm judging what to ask you based on your response to that. There, you know. No. When you left Twitch, was that simply because, like, teams.gg had come to mind? You was like, okay, I need to get that going right now. Or is it just a case of you personally felt your time was up at Twitch and it was time to move on? Then teams came about that way, you know? I'm just trying to gauge what the reason was.
It was a bit of both. We'd been working on teams for almost a year and a half prior to me leaving Twitch. So it was something that I'd been doing in my spare time, my weekends, like, same with my two co-founders, Tom and Stu. They were in full-time work as well. And we were just doing this. It was a fun project. It was a passion project.
Right.
So teams existed in our minds before I left Twitch. So that was part of it. There was part of it where I was excited to build things. I'm a digital builder, you see.
Yeah.
And so I was excited to build things like that. But then also on the other side of that is that, yeah, with Twitch, I was there for 5 years and I was working on branded content for that entire time. And we were progressing. Like, the big thing, the first few years at Twitch felt like we were building. We were building a team. We were building our output, what we were going to create for brands. We were constantly innovating. And as they are still now doing that, but it was to a point where I was like, okay, I need something new. I needed something new. And also there was this something new happening on the side that I felt like at some point prior to launching it to the public, I would need to go full time on it. It was 100% the right thing to do. At the time, it wasn't an easy decision. I was, you know, leaving Twitch was not easy for me. I still very much miss the company. I miss the people. I miss being in that office every day.
Mm-hmm.
But now looking back at it, we would not have been able to launch the way we did if I was still in a full-time job anywhere.
No.
I had to focus.
It must have been shit scary as well, because I assume Twitch pays quite well, right? Especially if you're a digital builder like yourself, right? And then to go to what's effectively a startup, right? And I don't think you went like the big investment route initially. It's just like, we'll get this going, build it ourselves and digital build it and then see what comes from there, right? So that must be a huge hurdle or obstacle you have to overcome mentally in preparation for it, you know?
Yeah. And that's why it wasn't a quick decision. I wrote down a lot of stuff around like the pros and cons of leaving. Mm-hmm. What financially, how would I be secure for the amount of time that I needed to be able to do teams for a certain amount of time
before we
can pay ourselves. Exactly. OnlyFans/digital builder. That's me. I hope that might exist. I might have just been plugging a real person. I'll have to check
that. Oh, shit. We'll get a commission on that. I'll make sure that happens.
Yeah. I put a lot of thought into it. It wasn't a quick, rash decision. It was something that I thought about for a long time, and I made sure that I was comfortable doing it. And I also had in mind, in the back of my head, if Teams fails, if we launched, if we could have launched Teams and no one wanted it, no one liked it.
Yeah.
Luckily, loads of people liked it, loads of people signed up and it was good and we've moved on from that worry. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know that. There was uncertainty there. So when I left Twitch, I decided to myself, I told myself, if Teams fails, if we launch it and no one likes it, that's okay. I can just get another job. Like, it's not the end of the world. But you're right, financially, Twitch pays a decent amount, and I was going to a place where I don't pay myself anything right now because we bootstrapped Teams completely.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always a worry there, but I had to just make sure I was financially secure in like savings and whatnot.
I think that actually might be a really important thing for people to hear, because I imagine quite a few people that listen and watch this podcast are probably looking to break into esports or make it a full-time thing or begin launching their own project but are worried about leaving their cushy job or whatever it may be. Yeah, it's and I think a lot of people in esports have had that kind of leap to make where it's like, okay, like, I understand esports is in its formative years, and if I'm launching my own thing, that's definitely in a formative state, you know, like, that's right at the beginning. But yeah, I want to make that happen. And sometimes you've got to take the risk and make the jump, and that's not always going to pay off. But if you've got enough faith in what you're doing, like you obviously had, and you've got the right people around you to make shit happen, then that's a really good place to start, you know?
Yeah. And taking the risk is important, but keep in mind that we worked on it for a year and a half before mm-hmm. we left. We didn't just have an idea. We didn't think, this is a problem that needs to be solved. This is how we'll do it. Let's quit our jobs and work on it. That wouldn't have been a smart thing to do. So, mm-hmm. and I know a load of people in esports who work behind the scenes in esports who still have full-time jobs. And yeah. then at the weekends, they work on esports events. That's something you have to do for a while. And that's something I had to do. Luckily, I was also working on something at work where I was loving it and really passionate about it as well. So I was lucky that I was kind of had this pincer attack at two different things.
No, that's crazy. So what I want to do is I want to go back to the point where or the inception of the idea behind teams.gg, like okay. how you realized there was a problem, and when you realized that you and your co-founders could yeah. could fill that gap as such and create something there.
Yeah, so it was probably 2 years ago now. Actually, we need to go back further. Back in 2012, I used to do a YouTube channel. I used to have a YouTube channel.
That's what I had in mind. There we go.
Called Streamgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And we that was just me and my friends, some of which who I now work on teams with, but a load of other gamers who went on to do great things in esports and gaming. We all used to play Call of Duty 4 together, Call of Duty 4
best,
Pro Mod.
Best game of all time.
Some people would disagree with us, but I agree. I like that. I love that game.
They're wrong. So.
and having a lovely resurgence recently with the Nations Cup. Mm-hmm. And so we used to go to events. We used to go to LAN events, talk to the players, talk to the commentators, just talk to punters who were coming to watch. And that was from things from Call of Duty Esports to Comic-Con to DreamHacks, where there was just loads of people in like thousands of people in a room. And we did all this fun stuff over a couple of years, all funded by ourselves, just going and flying and sleeping as cheaply as we could at these LAN events, like on the floor a lot. But it was fun. We just made entertainment. So when I joined Twitch, I stopped doing that because then that was kind of the springboard. A couple of people went to work at ESL. I worked at Twitch. And then we weren't doing Streamgasm anymore. About 2 years ago, I went back to the channel just to see what was up with it, just see what's going on with the views, if people are still commenting, are still people still watching these things we made. And there was one video which had 100,000 views, and we never got that many views. We weren't a big YouTube channel. We were no PewDiePie or anything.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, how did this happen? How has this one video got 100,000 views? And this one video was called How to Find a CSGO Team. So I looked into the analytics, and in the background, I could see that if you Google how to find a CSGO team, mm-hmm. this video came up on the front page of Google. It still does now, I believe, unless it's like catering the results for me, but which I do worry about sometimes. But yeah, it's still there. So that initially told me, wow, okay, people are finding this because they care about this thing. But what was most fascinating and was the point where I thought to myself, okay, this is something we should work on, was the comments. The YouTube comments below the video were just full of hundreds of people saying, I'm 17 years old, I've got 2,000 hours in Counter-Strike, I play Face It, I want to play these nights of the week, here's my Steam account, add me. And then another one and another one and another one. Like hundreds of these people. And it was at that moment where I videoed that. I kind of took a quick screen share of it, sent it to Tom and Stu, my now co-founders, and said, this is the thing. This shouldn't be like this. This isn't how people should be trying to find teammates. No. We should figure out a better way to do it. And that kind of coincided with a time where me and Tom and Stu were looking for the next thing to build.
Right.
I'm from a design background, creative agency, advertising. I do design. Tom is a back-end developer and Stu is a front-end developer. So between the three of us, we'd worked on web projects before. We were just looking for that next thing. We were looking for something we were passionate about that we could build digitally. Something. And that was it. That was the moment where we were like, okay, let's really sit down. We got in one of our houses. We sat down and we brainstormed and we figured out what would this look like. And I think we thought it would be a lot easier than it ended up being.
So you basically have made like the Tinder or Bumble or something of finding a team in CSGO.
In a way, yes.
Matchmaking-esque. Well, more Match.com or Plenty of Fish or whatever than Tinder, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we thought. We went down that route. We thought about what does it look like if people swipe on players. We went down that route. Mm-hmm. And what we figured was you need to know more about the player that you want to connect with. So actually, yeah, we're more like Match.com. We're more like eHarmony because what we want players to have are long-lasting relationships, long-lasting teams together, not just a hookup. This isn't in-game matchmaking. This isn't a pickup game, which is, I guess, the Tinder and the Bumble, potentially. Mm-hmm. I know people get relationships from those as well, but they're more known for just a quick fling mm-hmm. rather than eHarmony, which is all about personality tests and algorithms to figure out, okay, this person could be your soulmate kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to try and help people find, that group of friends that they are still playing games with in 15 years' time. I just went to a LAN event. I was just at Epic LAN this weekend with 14 people, who some of which I went to school with, and the rest of the people are people we've picked up along the way in our gaming lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Battlefield 2, Counter-Strike 1.5, 1.6, and we're all still at 30 years old sat in a LAN event together. There That's what go. We want to help people find, is maybe they want to find a pro team and go pro and find four people to just be the best that they can be and take over the world. Or maybe they just want to find people who play at the same times as them and have a friend group for long term.
Okay, and how do they find these people? Do they have to put in like their age, where they live? How deep does it really go? Like, what I know, I'm not telling you to spill the entire algorithm you've got set up or anything like that, but you know, just like basically how what are the proponents people are matched through?
Yeah, I can definitely go into the criteria and the attributes. There's obviously a load of sort of calculations behind the scenes as to how important certain things are mm-hmm. and that's how the algorithm does its thing. But in terms of the attributes, what we first did when we were figuring out how to build it was we surveyed 1,000 Counter-Strike players and we asked them what's most important to you when you are searching for teammates, and also why do you want to be in a team, so we could just understand.
Were these like amateur players, like entirely casual players, or what? Because, I mean, is there any weight in asking people who have already found success, like the top CSGO players, for example?
There is a little bit in that. What we did at the time is we mm-hmm. asked the Counter-Strike public.
Okay.
Like we put it out on Twitter. We spread it through a few friends of ours who have
got it
in that space. So we didn't have control over who answered it.
Yeah.
But we had a nice range of people from different skill levels, from different ambitions, different experiences as well. So we were happy with the we didn't know how many people we'd get to take the survey. We just cut it off at a point where we were happy with the variety of player that we'd got. But we weren't at that point asking pro players because they weren't really our target audience.
Makes sense.
They may have been at one point, but it was really the entire community of players who were our target audience.
Okay.
And so what we realized from that, when we went into it, we thought skill would be really high up. We thought people want to play with people as good as them. But actually it was probably fifth or sixth after the top one was availability. When are you available to play?
Right.
It doesn't matter to me if you're a little bit worse or better than me, as long as you can play on the same evenings as me and that we can get a group together. That's the most important thing, apparently, to people, which was fascinating. Then on top of that, not just when are you available, but how committed can you be? Will you turn up every... Will you turn up every Tuesday? Can you commit to playing one night a week?
Yeah.
Or three nights a week or five nights a week if you want to be like a team.
Intense, yeah.
Yeah. And then things like ambition and experience were a big thing. Like, what kind of games have you played before? Are you the type of person who just plays matchmaking? Or have you been to LAN events, international LAN events, local LAN events? Have you been playing online tournaments? Do you want to be doing that? Because you don't want to be stuck in a team or in a group of people who, if you just want to play matchmaking and they want to play Face It or enter ESEA Open or like lots of other leagues. So we start asking about these criterias because they are, but if we get the answers to those things, we can very quickly realize which players you'll be perfect playing with. There's loads of other stuff as well. I could rifle through them. Again, teams.gg has a good overview of all the different criterias, but we do ask things like age and location. You mentioned that at the beginning. Age is important to some people. If you've been playing CS since CS 1.3, 4, 5, and you're now 40, you don't necessarily want to be playing with 18-year-olds. You might want to play with people your age range with your kind of personality, right? And then if you're the other way, vice versa, like if you're 18, 16, 17, and you're just coming up and you want to play with maybe some 20-year-olds and that kind of thing, but you might not want to play with a 50, 60, 70-year-old. You can sign up as a 70-year-old if you want on our site. Like maybe an 18-year-old doesn't want to play with them. That's important for some people, but if it's not important, that's fine. It's just an age range that you can put in, very much like Tinder. And then the other one is the location. Location's important to some players, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm in the UK and I want to form a group of friends or a team to play at LAN events in the UK, I'm going to want to find a UK player, probably, or maybe a close by European country who's willing to travel. But I can say that I can just want to find UK players. Also, I want to find people in my time zone because that's important for actually getting together and playing. Yeah. And then also, ping is important, so I don't want to play with people over the Atlantic. But it's completely up to me as a person who's signing up on teams. I get to choose what's important to me at that point, and then I won't see people who are outside of my criteria, and they won't see me.
Right. So what's the main goal here? Is it to like breed the next like super team in esports, or is it just to cater to like the casual players who want to just have fun but find a group of friends to do it, or is it to fulfill the wide spectrum of needs there, you know?
Yeah, both. It's been designed in that way. It's been designed to cater for the entire spectrum. If you sign up and say, I'm casual, I want to play matchmaking one night a week, and I've got no more ambitions than just playing at matchmaking, you'll find people like that.
Right.
If you say, I want to play 7 days a week, six days a week, my ambition is to go to international LAN events, my previous experience is maybe local LAN events, I am level 10 on Faceit, I'm S rank on ESEA, I'm obviously global in CS, and then I have all these ambitions. And also the one thing I haven't touched on is the focus areas. So we also ask what you want to focus on when you're in game.
Right.
Like, do you want to just play for fun? Or do you want to be practicing strats? Do you want to be coming up with tactics? Do you want to be researching other teams, analyzing the teams that you're going to be playing against? Things like that. That all tells us how serious people want to take the game. So, and we cater for those two people that I just explained, but then everyone else in between as well. I would love it. I would love it one day if a team walks onto a stage and on a major tournament, and we know that team was put together by finding each other on teams. That would
be
incredible.
Insane.
That's like our North Star, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because I know that if we've helped those five people find each other and they've got to that level of Counter-Strike,
yeah,
we will have helped thousands and thousands of other players find exactly what they were looking for as well.
Without a doubt. And one thing, like these dating sites, as far, I don't know, I've only used Tinder, just full disclosure that I don't care. I've used Tinder before. Right. You match with someone, right? You speak to them, you go and meet them, right? You never get to rate the experience afterwards. You never get to go, right, this person didn't actually turn up, was really slow at replying and didn't look like anything like her picture, right? And then give her a 1 star out of 5, and then she's, if several people have rated this person a 1 star, then they're weighted less within the algorithm and they're shown to less people and all this kind of shit, right? Or there should be like a reputation score or something.
Yeah.
Right.
I tell you. Yeah. It's fair. I don't know so much about the dating website thing.
No, but I'm going to. Yeah, 100%. But I'm going to loop. Yeah. It'll make more sense when I loop it back to team. So if you don't already have this,
Yeah.
Then it's yours for free. This beautiful idea is yours for free. Didn't know, but do you have like a reputation score as such, or anything that weighs the time wasters and the people who have lied in their profile, or the people who are maybe not quite as good as they say they are, or they say they're trying to be competitive but really they're just pissing about and trying to do 360 AWP shots and shit? You know what I mean? Like, is there anything there?
Yeah, there is something there. Okay. So currently we don't have that in the site, but that's something we need to add and want to add. It's one of many, many features that we have in our list of things we want to include on Teams at some point. Commendations, maybe not recommendations as such, but like ratings and commendations and also reporting. That all comes under one bucket where we want to allow players to feedback to us about another player. That's not necessarily just because they've done something bad.
No, maybe
they were great. Yeah. Maybe they were brilliant. Maybe they're not going to be in a team together, but they want to just give them a good rating. It's kind of, I guess, similar to like an Uber rating, an Uber driver rating after a journey. We haven't delved into exactly the UX of that, like the user experience of what that reporting and feedback would look like, but it's definitely something we want to have. It helps us understand how we can be better as well. Mm-hmm. It helps us improve our algorithm, helps us improve our entire experience. If we can see that people aren't actually matching with people they want to play with, we want to understand why. That helps us make a better product for the players. But then it also helps future players because we can say, okay, well, this person has completely lied on their profile and that they will... I don't know. We don't know what we'll do with it yet, but maybe we remove it. Maybe we contact that person and say, look, this is the feedback you've got. Maybe you want to change this. There's a load of different ways we could do that. And that's something we want to explore.
Okay.
Future. Yeah,
so obviously it's CSGO at the moment and you'll obviously want to completely master that game before doing anything else, right? You want to make the experience as streamlined as possible for yourselves and know what's what before presumably rolling out onto other games. Have you thought that far ahead, or is it just literally a case of like, right, there's no point thinking about other games yet because we know we can still make things better for CSGO, you know? Because I mean, like Project A, for example, when that comes out, that may be a really good opportunity for yourselves. But learning from CSGO first and doing everything that you can there would be seemingly a lot better moving forward. So what's kind of your thoughts on that?
Focus is important. Is my main thought on that. That's what I keep telling myself, because there is obviously that ambition to move to other games. And we do think about it in terms of looking into the future. That is a big part of my job right now is forecasting, planning for the next 18 months, 3 years, 5 years, what that might look like for teams. That's a big part of what I'm having to do right now. So I've very much thought about it. I don't know if it's definite, but if I was to show you the spreadsheets I was working on last night, I could show you exactly which months we'll be releasing in which games we want to release.
Okay.
So it's very much planned out in our minds. But you're right, you're correct. We want to focus on CS. We want to make it the best that it can be for CS. Reporting and feedback is just one example of how we can improve the entire experience for Counter-Strike. That will then feed into more games in future. So there's different features we want to do. However, our main focus right now is actually creating the functionality on our site to allow us to add multiple games.
Okay.
That is a big thing for us. That is for a couple of reasons, because we don't want, when we go to come to sort of go to new games, we don't want it to feel like we're having to copy paste the whole site or start from scratch each time. Mm-hmm. We want to make what we've built scalable. And at the moment, it's not. It was built for one game. We need to rework a load of the back end of our site so that it is scalable, so that when we come to add a new game, it's as easy as us going, Apex Legends, let's say. We want to add this. We need all the same criteria as Counter-Strike, but the roles are going to be different. The focus areas will be slightly different. They won't be practicing nades, probably. But we also need to add in a criteria that is which character do you play, which obviously you don't need for Counter-Strike. So we need to develop that criteria. So we've developed that for Apex and plug that into that. And then when we come to go to, let's say, Overwatch or League of Legends or something like that, that character module, that thing we built for which character do you play, which are your favorite characters, we plug that into those games too. We don't have to recreate it
right
from scratch. So we're thinking a lot about how we do that. That is going to be months of work. So that's why we're planning ahead and we're really figuring out how to do that. The other reason is that we want to start helping more publishers and developers, like indie developers and mid-level, like actually any developer of any game that is multiplayer. We believe that the feature that we built should be in their game. Built into the game, alongside the game. Like,
right.
Realistically, I wish that this feature was in it, that every game that I played while I was growing up, where I was playing on my own. Really, okay. I wish there was a button in the, I wish there was a feature, find friends or find a team, find a squad, find a clan, whatever it is in that game, and it did what we built. I wish that was just in the games. So to get us to a point where we can start talking to publishers and saying, look, what we've built here should really be just a feature in your game, or maybe a feature in your distribution platform, let's say Steam or Discord, Uplay, all these things. There's so many places this could live, but it won't be beneficial to any of them until we have our multi-game capabilities. So that's why it's a big focus of ours right now. But you're totally right. Alongside that, we want to make sure that we're giving the best experience for Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. We're only a few months in, and we've got a lot of way to go.
Well, being able to plug and play as such in the back end of your site to replicate for new games and such, that should, in theory, lower the risk of spending so much time on enabling a certain game. Say, I don't know, the next big game that comes out, Project A, right? You do all the work needed to enable that to work on teams.gg, and then the game dies out in a year. Like, it goes the way of, I don't know, there's too many games that I can think of that yeah. I'm not doing great right now. Like, I don't know, and that's a huge risk. And imagine spending 5-6 months getting that perfect, and then it's dead in 5-6 months. It's just like, oh, right, well, that was an entire waste of time.
On the flip side, people were able to form teams in that game, then the ecosystem and the whole community thrived. That's our thinking.
So do you see this more so being a thing that developers and publishers can work with, rather than just being you stay kind of independent in a sense?
Yeah, I think we want to enable developers to use this.
Okay. So, which game would benefit the most from having it at the moment, in your opinion?
A game that's already out.
Yes. If you could like plug this in, teams.gg, yeah, fully utilized now.
There's loads of big games that so the one that comes to mind right now is probably because I've just been sat in the middle of a LAN event with a load of these players. But Siege is Rainbow Six Siege is a big one, because actually, when you look at the player numbers of that game compared to your League of Legends and your Fortnites, even your Counter-Strikes, the player base isn't huge.
Mm-hmm.
But the community around the esports side of Siege and the competitive community around that game is really passionate. And actually, it's a very good game.
It's maybe not
for me, because I think there's just too much going on. I don't know what's happening. I just stood by a wall. I was trying to play it. I stood by a wall. The whole thing exploded. Didn't know why. So maybe not for me. But I was watching these lads play at Epic, and they were great. And I think that community could really thrive from something like this. It's something we heard from the players. They're like, oh, please, can we have this for Siege? Because really what you want to do is retain more players as a publisher, but also as a community. I remember this from COD 4. We were part of COD 4 Pro Mod. It died eventually, but it would have probably lasted longer if there was more teams. Mm. And then there's more tournaments who are like, okay, well, there's loads of teams. And we can get teams easier. So we're going to keep providing them tournaments. And then the ecosystem just continues. So I think Siege comes to mind. But think of any multiplayer game, any competitive multiplayer game, they could benefit from it. And even co-op games like Left 4 Dead 2, right? Like, that's right. Obviously a very old game now, but a game like that where you're not competing necessarily, And I'm talking about like the collaborative, like four players playing against zombies, waves of zombies, maybe COD zombies, things like, maybe you could do that. You could have teams.gg for COD zombies.
Right.
Like, you're not competing against anyone. You're not entering any tournaments, but you want to play COD zombies. And I don't have any friends who play it.
Yeah.
So I need three people to play it on a Tuesday.
Yeah. And you want to get as far as you can in zombies. So you want to find the people who are competent and have reached a certain round, blah, 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 blah. It writes itself.
Exactly.
You're a genius.
Overcooked too. Right, I want to cook some pasta and rice. I was playing with my sisters at Christmas on there, and like I was the rice guy.
Right, and I could have guessed that. I don't know why.
Why?
I don't know.
What about me gives away that I'm the rice guy?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just good at guessing that kind of stuff. I don't know. It just came to me. I was like, yeah, he's a rice guy.
Oh yeah, I was sprinting around the kitchen grabbing the rice, not making sure it doesn't burn. Anyway, that's a great example of a game that no one would imagine was an e-sport or a competitive game. Mm-hmm. But it's a game where to play it properly and to have fun with it, you could do with some friends. And it could work for that. It could work for any game. And I think that's the beauty of what... That's why what we want to do is create this back end of the site that for now allows us to make multiple games, but in future will be like an SDK or an API that allows you as a game developer, you're making a new game that's multiplayer, plug it into your game.
Mm-hmm.
You should plug this into your game because it will mean that everyone who plays it actually plays with people they like playing with.
And that makes sense.
They'll play more often. There's studies that show that when people play with friends, they play for longer, they play more often, they enjoy the game more, and they win more.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing I probably game once every 2 weeks now, and it'll be a game of Rocket League on the PS4 with a friend I went to school with, right? And it'll get to, I don't know, say like 11. And I'm like, right, I've got early morning. I've got to go. And he's like, oh, one more? And I'm like, no. Oh, fuck, yes. And then it's like 1:30 in the morning. I'm knackered. But like, I'm just like, oh, well, that's worth it, you know. But if I'm to play by myself, I'll probably go off way earlier. So I fully know what you're saying there. That's partially me just...
You just got retained because you were playing with a friend.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's partially just revealing to everybody that doesn't work in esports that when you work in esports, you actually game less.
True. But I think that's life. Just when you work. When you work more, you play less.
But I mean, like when I was in my full-time job before I was in esports, I'd come home and I'd game a lot, right? And now, I don't know, maybe just to get away from shit, I don't know. But now I'm around video games and I see video games all the time. I don't have the fucking energy for it. I'm just like, right, get me away for a bit.
That's interesting. So it's not that you don't have time to play games. You just don't.
I could make time, but I'm just like, oh, my time's better used somewhere else now. I've been around video games all day. Like, I just need a break from it.
Okay.
I don't know if that's just because I've got a toxic mentality towards things. Probably is, to be honest with you.
No, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I can't relate. I can't relate
that
much to it because I don't know. Obviously, I'm around games all day, but I'm not playing. I feel like playing games and even watching a game is very different for me, a very different experience. Time will fly when I'm playing games.
Oh, without a doubt.
And it's the purest escapism for me. So I worry about this. I worry about it from a time standpoint. I worry that time flies, so I'll play games, but I'll spend too long playing them.
Yep.
And then the next day I'll want to play again and I want to play again. Mm. So I worry about that. But it's also really good to have an escapism, an escape. It's really good to have a break from work. It actually makes you more productive.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm telling myself. But also, I don't know.
Well,
I play Counter-Strike.
I think I've figured out a bit more, actually. Right. So ever since Rayman M on the PS2, I think it was, or maybe PS1, I can't remember. Rayman multiplayer, right? The only games I've ever played are competitive games multiplayer. Right, that's all I've ever played. So, in a sense, I've always been involved in esports without being aware of it in terms of the competitive side of stuff, right? So, then you move on to your COD 4, then I went back to COD 2, and then it was all the CODs, and then there was Halo as well, and that was Rocket League, and I played a bit of Siege, like, trying to play a bit of CSGO, but I'm shit on mouse and keyboard, so I've given up on that. Like, everything I've ever played, I've never played any solo stuff really besides the Spider-Man game. That was it, and I got bored of it.
Okay. I was gonna say maybe that's what you need. Maybe you need a good single player game.
I can't do it. I just get bored. I need to be kicking someone's ass or getting my ass kicked to to enjoy games. That's what it is. So maybe, maybe
Tekken.
I've never played a fighting game. I've never played a fighting game either. But yeah, so maybe it's something there as to why I don't want to game all the time. I don't know, because maybe I have to go 100% all the time when I'm playing, and sometimes I'm just not in the mood to do that. But I don't go to games for a casual experience.
Yeah, I
need to go to a therapist, actually, thinking about all this.
Like, well, I think that's what this is. I think that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, I wasn't planning for this at all, but it's happened.
Well, there you go. That's a great. This is a great interaction with the audience. Leave a comment down below on what game Adam should be playing. Whether it's single player and you think he just hasn't discovered the right one yet, or what multiplayer game can he play that he can really get into and get his ass kicked.
You are so much better than me at this content creation stuff, mate. I'm just at the end. I'm just like, yeah, subscribe if you want. Otherwise, I'll see you on the next one.
Make sure to tell them to press the notification bell. Oh, this is actually a genuine
click
genuine
the bell
thing.
Or whatever. Yeah,
click the bell, because if you actually give a shit about what Adam's doing, it'll help him a lot if you click the bell next to the subscribe thing, because then you'll actually get a notification. You won't just subscribe for no reason. I don't understand what YouTube have done with that.
No,
the bell is basically a subscription now.
Exactly, because so, like, I guess the subscription button doesn't work really. Like, sometimes
it's just a follow now, basically. It follows if you go to the homepage.
It's fucked. So since talking about YouTube, and obviously we've touched on your past at Twitch, I want to bring something up, and it's been called Streaming Wars. Mm-hmm. Call it whatever you fucking want. I don't know. It's where these platforms are competing against each other, right? Which they always have been, but even more so now, even more aggressively now. We're seeing people hopping about on exclusive contracts, getting millions of dollars to be at one place for a set amount of time, right? And that's been going on for ages, but not as aggressively and as publicly as this, right?
Yeah, not in the mainstream as much as it.
Okay. And obviously we're finally now, as I predicted, though it's an easy prediction, that it would lend itself to leagues and tournaments at some point, getting involved again. And with YouTube and Google's deal with Activision Blizzard, which covers your Call of Duty League, Overwatch League, and Hearthstone, right? So you're very experienced with Twitch. You know a lot about Twitch, right? Just inherently because you've worked there for so long and you know it, right? Yeah. What would it take for somebody to take Twitch down? Or what is Twitch doing that no one else is that just means it'll stay on top? Or do you think it's prone to lose out? Because I don't see anyone doing anything at the moment which is going to take it down. Like, Caffeine is bringing in celebrities. Mixer's gone big on a couple of the biggest streamers and not really done much there. Facebook Gaming has gone for, like, decent-sized influencers and streamers, but not the biggest. Mm-hmm. And then YouTube's obviously doing its own thing. It's got Valkyrie and Courage and now the tournaments and leagues.
Yeah.
All different approaches.
Okay, so I can answer the second question. Twitch has got it all. What does Twitch do differently that I think still keeps it on top? I think it's the community. I know it's the community. I think this is quite widely known that it's the community features, the technological build-up of the site and how it's built to cater for communities, especially smaller micro communities who become families within Twitch. And then there are thousands and thousands of these micro communities, and then that is then layered on underneath your much larger communities, and then your esports events, which then are more like being in an arena.
Yeah.
So it's less important. The community thing is less important for the esports broadcasts. It's nailing that community feel is what Twitch has done over the years. It's all about the community and the creators that are at the head of those communities.
Right.
And supporting those. That's a massive thing. And it's really difficult to beat that. Like, so Facebook just doesn't do that. Like, you don't feel like that in Facebook. You only see a stream when you're scrolling past it on the feed. YouTube has this to an extent, because YouTube was very much all about community from a VOD level, but your consumers of the video on YouTube are not necessarily there for a live experience, but they're getting used to it. So it could happen over time. I think probably the one I'm most impressed with outside of Twitch is probably YouTube, because the technology, their actual video player and their live video experience is fantastic. Then kind of figuring out how to relate comments and chat and stop that being confusing. But there is, it still happens where there are comments on a VOD but there's also a chat while it was live, and that's different, and it's a little bit confusing. Messy, and I can understand from someone who just uses YouTube, you might get confused by where should I be communicating with this person? Can I communicate with them? Is this live? And I think they've still got some things to iron out there, but they're getting better and they're listening, and it helps that then they're bringing content creators over as well. That's it for me. For me, it's less about who can they pay for to get them on the platform, and focusing more about the actual feature set and the technology behind what people are using.
Okay.
Facebook doesn't work for this. Mixer's an interesting one. Like, it's just very different. I think they are building some communities, but they're doing it in a not very dissimilar way to what Twitch was doing 5 to 10 years ago, just in TV.
Right.
I think it's, it's just very different. And I don't think actually, I think you're going to have to do something very different when you're Mixer to try and take over Twitch, to try and be the home of as many communities as people have on Twitch now. Like, they have homes, they have families that they go to. I will open up Twitch now and I'll just see who's live and be like, oh, I want to go there, because not only do I want to quickly say hello to that streamer, but also the people in chat, because I know they'll be there. Them,
right.
That kind of thing. It's the community feel that really puts them on top.
Right.
There's a load of stuff I didn't answer there.
Like, no, it's fine.
The money thing. Yeah, good on the streamers. I don't blame them for taking a big paycheck. Right.
Yeah.
It's fucking stressful being a streamer.
Because every day could be the last day that you have a high amount of viewers, you know? Like, what if the game you've been playing for so long is no longer the game? What if, like, Escape from Tarkov comes out and then steals all the attention for a bit, then you pivot to that, and then the next day it's back to Fortnite because there's a new update, and it's like, oh shit, I can't get any viewers because I'm a bit late to everything that's going on. You have to be very reactive, it seems, or just kind of, carve your own lane and just firmly sit in it. Like, some people are doing with Blackout, where that's never really been the most popular thing, but, like, they've been consistent at it, so if you do want to watch that, or you become part of their community, you're going to keep going back, you know? But yeah, it seems stressful as shit. And I mean, I ain't got the personality for streaming. I could not do that. So I commend anyone that does it and then gets the bag from a Google or from a Facebook. You know, like, fair play to you. Like, cement yourself a bit more. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. What you just described there is that all the anxieties that streamers have around viewer numbers, it's the same as if you're an Instagram content creator influencer, where if you don't get as many likes on a photo, you're questioning why. Like, it's constant. If you don't have people... Their viewer numbers go up and down with game releases, as you mentioned. And it's a very, like, it's very anxiety building especially when it's their livelihood that's on the line. So if you're someone like Shroud, for instance, and you, at that point, when you're trying to make a living, you're thinking, okay, well, I have to play this X game. I have to play X game. But really, I'd prefer to play Y game.
Yeah.
If you are able to do a deal with Mixer, like he has done, and yeah, he has less viewers now, but he plays whatever game he wants, and actually he's probably happier, and he's got a bit of money in the process, so like, what's the downside for him?
Yeah,
good on him. And like, he's amazingly talented, he's funny, and he's like, good on him. And I think everyone at Twitch feels that way. I don't think anyone who's left Twitch for a big deal like that, anyone internally at Twitch is like, oh, what a... They're dead.
That's what I was going to ask, actually. That's
not true. No, because they're actually, it's almost like working with someone, and then they leave the job to go get a higher paid job somewhere else, or they get a promotion, or they get hired at an amazing company, and you're like, good on you, mate.
Fair play.
Thanks for being a part of our family.
Yeah.
But nice one. And they'll always be welcome back. Like, if his contract runs out and he's like, now I'm going to go back to Twitch, Twitch will be like, all right, mate, welcome back.
I imagined some people behind the scenes being a lot more immature than what you've just made them out to be there. Where they're just like, oh, fuck them, good riddance. Like, yeah, we don't need them anyway. We've got so-and-so. Like, we're the number one platform. You know what I mean? I'd be like that. If I was the daddy in my industry, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, fuck, shove it. Let's see what happens, mate. You'll come running back. You know what I mean?
But I think Twitch is a lot less immature internally than people make out and people think. people think it's a load of gamers kids, like, and there is that, like, there is younger people at the company, but it's also, it's headed up by a very experienced team now of executives from around the industry. And even the partnerships team, who maybe in 2011 when Twitch was created, maybe we all started young. Like, I was 25. Yeah, like, we're all now 30 year old people who understand the business because we've been in it for so long. And it's not, yeah, no, it's, we might joke about it. Like, I'm sure, like, I wasn't there when these people left. Actually, the day I left Twitch was the day Ninja left Twitch.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I think there's something there.
Yeah, there, I know. I think he was like, James is going to do a tweet about leaving Twitch. I'm going to see about that.
I guess your email from Mixer, getting an invite to the platform for $1 million a year, just got lost or got into spam or something, you know?
Yeah, no, I tried putting the feelers out, but nothing came back.
Oh, shit.
I guess I wasn't popular enough.
Well, now we've established that you're a digital builder. I'm actually going to put that in my Twitter bio, by the way.
A digital builder.
Yeah, I fucking love that. If I was to name this episode something other than your name, it would be that, because that is a banging term, and I can't wait for it to catch on, and then we can point people back to this on the 25th of February 2020 when we coined the term.
Yeah.
Nice. And that's all ours now. Well, we're getting close to the hour anyway. So what I want to do is give you your time to go crack on doing what you're doing. I'll go back to doing some work. I understand that we've both got shit to do today, but I appreciate you taking the time. And honestly,
I'm on fire. I've got the sun's come out, and now I'm just...
Oh, I've got a window behind me, and it's just been glaring light the entire time. It's the most annoying thing, right? So, there we go. Where can people find yourself? Where can people find teams.gg on social media if they want to, or the internet? Yeah. The interwebs and all that.
So you can find me at James Duffield on Twitter, Instagram, things like that. And then teams.gg, just go to teams.gg and check it out and see what you think. And you can let me know about it. Like, any feedback you have, any ideas, we're always listening. There's loads of stuff. Like, Teams is everywhere. We've got Discord, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit. So just search teams.gg, it'll come up. It's either teams_gg or teams.gg, depending on which social platform let us put whatever characters in the names. And check it out. Like, we love hearing from players, and if you don't play Counter-Strike and you think that it would be really beneficial to your community of players and you, do let us know, because that's we're always on the lookout, as you've heard, for what games to move to next.
Okay, well, well,
thank you for having me, Adam.
Oh, it's okay, of course. No, I like, for full disclosure, people listening, this was a quick turnaround. James is a very, very good guy, and has been very helpful, and I'm sure he'll have a lot of success with teams.gg along with his co-founders.
And as to you as well with the podcast, I hope keep it up. Man. I think I want to see you with 100,000s of views, and
I nearly packed it all in. I nearly packed everything esports in. I'll go into that at some point.
Okay, I want to hear it. Let me know when that podcast comes out.
Well, I tweeted some stuff the other day people can go find, but like, yeah, I just kind of fell out of love with everything temporarily. But I'm staying consistent. I'm cracking on. Like, yeah, I just kept my head down, and then it's kind of come back over time. Also made some like changes in my personal life, just like all the habits I was doing there. And I think instinctively, subconsciously even, I just wanted to make changes everywhere where not everything needed to be changed, you know. But nonetheless... Yeah. Thank you again for joining me, mate. I really appreciate that, and good luck. We'll keep in touch, no doubt. And
thank you
for those who have watched and listened. Thank you. I think this is episode 13 of the Adam Fitch podcast. I think it is. You'll know. Just have a look at the episode number, whatever. If you want to, you can subscribe. If you want to, you can follow the podcast wherever you're on. It's on all major platforms, because I do it like that. I do it fucking properly. You'll see me again, or you'll hear me again next Tuesday. Don't know who's going to be on. I'll figure that shit out, but it'll be someone good as always. So thank you for spending 54 minutes with us, and I'll see you on the next one. Cheers.
Hit the bell.
The fucking bell.